had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live.
I want to remind everyone, you can get the archives of every Normal Show Live at the Stash blog, stash.normal.org.
For almost 40 years, Normal has been the place to go for the latest studies and news on marijuana science, policy, and activism. For over a decade, one man at Normal has written and reviewed more studies and news stories regarding marijuana than almost anyone on the planet. First as senior policy analyst and now as deputy director, Normal's Paul Armentano has written for major newspapers, academic journals, and magazines on the subject of cannabis and is frequently requested as an expert witness in the courtroom. His knowledge and experience are an amazing asset to the cannabis community. Available to you now in a segment we call Behind the Headlines with Paul Armentano.
Paul Armentano joined us by telephone from the Bay Area in California. Paul, how are you doing today?
I'm hanging in there, Russ.
Glad to hear it. We bring you here today to discuss some recent studies. You know, a lot of people talk about cannabis and cancer. On one side, you've got the prohibitionist saying if you smoke a joint, it's like 400 cigarettes, you're going to get lung cancer and die. And on the other side, sometimes on our side, we have people saying, well, you smoke marijuana, you'll never get cancer. You'll live to be 118. So where does the truth lie? What can you tell us about the latest studies on cannabis and cancer?
Well, as I'm sure many of your listeners would expect, the truth falls somewhere in the middle, or if not in the middle, at least quite a bit closer to those that are saying that cannabis has the ability to potentially treat, if not cure, cancer. You know, this idea that the equivalent of one marijuana cigarette is like X number of tobacco cigarettes, or this notion that if you use marijuana, you will be diagnosed later in life with lung cancer, has really been debunked quite consistently. And in fact, the government's top researcher on this issue, Donald Tashkin, who was affiliated with the University of California at Los Angeles, he recently wrote an affidavit for the Assembly Criminal Justice and Health Committee in California, documenting that through his 30 years of research on this subject and having published over 89 different papers looking at marijuana and cancer, he's convinced that marijuana smoking is not a significant risk for either COPD or cancers of the lung or aerodigestive tract. So if that's his conclusion, I think that's the conclusion that's good enough for our community as well.
Yeah, and for folks who don't know that, COPD, he mentions, that's chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, a big lung disease, and marijuana smokers haven't been shown to, just marijuana-only smokers, we should be clear, haven't been shown to have any higher incidence of COPD. One thing that has happened recently with respect to cannabis and cancer happened last year when the California Environmental Protection Agency declared the constituent chemicals in cannabis smoke to be carcinogens. And, of course, the prohibitionists have picked that up and run with it, saying, see, marijuana causes cancer and you shouldn't take it. So what's the real truth on that one?
Well, here's what's going on, and you know, there's really a lot going on. We know that when there is combustion, there is the formation of potentially carcinogenic materials. Whether we're talking about combustion of tobacco, combustion of firewood, combustion of marijuana, you name it. But the risk is the combustion itself and the chemicals that are produced at the point of combustion. So when we're talking about burning smoke and someone inhaling burning smoke, there is a risk of that person inhaling certain carcinogens. So it's not surprising that the California EPA deemed marijuana smoke, not marijuana itself, but the smoke from marijuana to be a potential carcinogen. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of different chemicals on California's carcinogenic list, marijuana smoke literally just being one of hundreds of those. But what we need to talk about is not just the marijuana smoke, but we need to talk about marijuana itself. There are compounds in marijuana that clearly have anti-cancer properties. THC is one of those, and there are several others. Cannabidiol, CBN, CBC. These chemicals have been studied now for over 35 years. They've been isolated and shown to have anti-cancer properties in different lines of cancerous cells and tumors, and they've been used synergistically and shown to have anti-cancer properties in different types of cancer cells and cancer lines. So while there may be some potential carcinogenic risks in the smoke caused by burning marijuana, these risks appear to be offset by the anti-cancer properties in marijuana itself. I should also mention that unlike tobacco smoke, which actually can constrict the airways, the cannabinoids in marijuana are bronchodilators, which means they expand the airways. And that's likely why you don't see this association between marijuana smoke and COPD, an association that you do see with tobacco smoking. So just to clarify, the combustion itself poses the risk, but there's compounds in marijuana that offset that risk. And, of course, if somebody wanted to avoid the combustion altogether, they could pursue other alternative ways of ingesting marijuana beyond inhalation. For instance, they could use vaporization, which heats the active components in marijuana to the point where they turn into a vapor, but not to the point where the surrounding material reaches the point of combustion.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're speaking with Paul Armentano, Normal's deputy director, also called on in courts across the country as an expert witness many times on the science of cannabis and the studies of cannabis. I'm also checking out the chat room here at live.normal.org, picking up people's thoughts on the issue here. I have one chat here from the NorCal kid who says, we had a patient, apparently in California, bring in edibles with labels that said, warning, the state of California has deemed marijuana to contain carcinogens. So you're saying for edibles, there's no need for that under the law or under the science?
No. In fact, under the law, only the smoke itself is deemed a carcinogen. So an edible product or a tincture would not need to contain this warning label. In fact, under the law, it is only businesses that I believe have 10 or more people, 10 or more employees that may be exposed to the potential to a carcinogen that is on this list. It is only in those instances where that place of employment would need to adhere some sort or post some sort of warning label. To give people some perspective, we don't live in California. Alcohol is on the carcinogen list in California. So is aspirin. You do not, when you buy a bottle of alcohol in California, there is no warning label on it specific to the state of California saying this product is carcinogenic. When you buy a bottle of aspirin in the state of California, there's no warning label from the state of California saying this product is carcinogenic. So this belief that dispensaries or other sellers of medical marijuana products would have to impose some sort of warning label that these other products don't, I don't believe is the case at all.
Okay. Got a question here in the chat room from Mike Can, one of our great activists out in Boston, Massachusetts, does some great work out there with the Boston Freedom Rally and so much more with MassCan Normal. He's got a question here about joints and saying, so because the combustion is the problem, is the paper in a joint also something that could be carcinogenic, and should people stay away from joints for that reason?
There have been some studies looking at inhalation, whether it's from vaporization, whether it's from water pipes, whether it's from pipes, whether it's from joints, and trying to determine which delivery device delivers the maximum amount of cannabinoids while delivering the least amount of potential carcinogens. And what those studies have found, and there's several of them now, is that vaporization tends to be the most efficient and safest way to deliver the maximum volume of cannabinoids while eliminating the majority of carcinogenic smoke. The second most effective way after vaporization, however, is in fact joints.
Oh.
And this has to do with the fact that water pipes don't eliminate much of the particulates and other contaminants in combustion. It has to do with when a person's using a pipe, they lose many of the cannabinoids are lost in side stream smoke. So if somebody is looking for potentially an effective and safer alternative that isn't vaporization, it appears that joints are the way to go.
Okay, so vaporization first, joints second, and we'll leave it at that, I suppose. Before we let you go, Paul, is there any new breaking studies or information with regard to long-term use of cannabis by people and their likelihood of getting cancer, or anything that we'd want to leave on today?
Well, there was a study, and you mentioned it on in your news report a couple weeks ago, that found that the anti-cancer properties of marijuana work better as a whole as opposed to simply taking different constituents of the marijuana plant and applying them individually to the point of cancer. I thought that was a very interesting study. There was a study published about 3 or 4 months ago that looked at long-term marijuana smoking in humans and looked to assess whether these users of marijuana would have a higher or lower risk of cancers of the head and neck. And what it found was that moderate users of marijuana for about 20 years had a statistically significantly lower risk of having marijuana than people that didn't use marijuana at all. What was especially interesting about that study was they found that individuals who had high risk factors for coming down with cancer of the head and neck, and specifically that was tobacco smoking and alcohol use, if those individuals used marijuana in addition to smoking tobacco and drinking alcohol over a lifetime, they still had an elevated risk of head and neck cancer, but it was far lower than those individuals who only drank alcohol and used tobacco and didn't use marijuana. Hmm. So that was a very compelling study showing that there is likely some sort of safety buffer from the long-term use of marijuana, at least as it pertained to head and neck cancer.
Wow, that's some amazing stuff. You can catch all of these studies listed up at normal.org, and Paul has written up many of them on the Normal blog at blog.normal.org. And thanks so much, Paul, for calling in today and dishing out some science for our listeners.
No problem, Russ. Always good to be here.
All right. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with Douglas Hyatt. He's an attorney in Seattle, Washington, who defended Tim Guerin, a medical marijuana patient who was given a death sentence when he was kicked off the liver transplant list for using medical marijuana. This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. We'll be right back after this.
This is Normal Show Live.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary and it's not in mine.
Providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
I don't hear what you say. That ain't right. I said, that ain't right. That ain't right. I don't hear what you say.